Accession number 30025, reel 3.
And just very briefly tell me what happened next. So we've got the chronology again.
On the soup wagon.
Yeah, we got the end of that story, so we were just talking about you delivering the soup.
Oh, right, yeah, I've lost track on that, but I mean, wait.
Bye.
You're on tape now.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Sorry?
You're on tape.
You're a star.
Sorry.
Front door's going to go now.
Oh, let's start. Pause. So, what happened next?
Yeah, I was posted from Wattisham to Bruggen in Germany, Royal Air Force Bruggen, the second in command of a VIP flight. Flying Gazelles, and I was there for 3.5 years before then returning back to the UK to Middle Wallop, the School of Aviation, where I was then second in command of the Development and Trial Squadron at Middle Wallop.
The Development and Trial Squadron, what do they do?
Development trial, we trial everything that's going to be fitted to or modifications to any of the Army helicopters. So we trial it, we electronic countermeasure it. We put it through its paces.
What's the electronic countermeasure?
Well, we want to make sure that any piece of equipment that's going to be fitted to the aircraft will not interfere with other bits of equipment that's already on the aircraft. So radios, radars, navigation equipment, or even engines themselves. You know, we've got electronic cutouts on them. So what we don't want to do is switch on some sort of device in the aircraft that's going to chop an engine. And that's what we in D&T put the whole bit of equipment through a series of trials, and then once we're quite happy on the basics, we then stick it through Boscombe Down, which is going through Kinetic, and they do the in-depth work on the electronic countermeasures. That was obviously D&T squadron. I was posted there in 1999, and at the same time I was a big fan of the Blue Eagles throughout my career, but being back in Middle Wallop, the Blue Eagles helicopter display team was obviously stationed in Middle Wallop, and I was getting back into the urge to fly for them. Bearing in mind, it was normally it was instructors who used to fly for the Blue Eagles, and non-instructors going back years weren't allowed to fly with the Eagles. It was always instructors, but then they relaxed the rule fact that they didn't have enough instructors to take away from training, so they were using guys from the main army units on a voluntary recommended basis, i.e. they'd put names forward, and then their commanding officer, the officer commanding and their QHI, which is the qualified helicopter instructor for their particular squadron or regiment, would then put their names forward if they were suitable. And I can't remember the full criteria, I think it was in excess of 1,000 hours, above average rated, etc., to get on the display team. Excuse me. And in 2000, I watched a display with a friend of mine who happened to be the chief line instructor for the Army Air Corps at Middle Wallop. And I said to him then, I'd love to display the links. And I was encouraged to put my name forward for the season of 2001. I was very surprised when I was chosen to fly the links on the display. And having gone through a couple of months of training, I became the Lynx display pilot for the 2001 Blue Eagles display team.
What was it about the Lynx in particular?
Well, the in the Blue Eagles 2001 team, there was one Lynx and four Gazelles. The Lynx can do the loop, the backflip, the eagle roll, manoeuvres that the Gazelle will never do because of the rigid rotor head on the Lynx, and the Gazelle has only got a semi-rigid rotor head. Incorrect. The Gazelle hasn't got a rigid head at all. The Lynx has got a semi-rigid rotor head, which means you could go upside down or do all the unusual manoeuvres with it. And it's always something I wanted to do from many years back, and I never thought that was an opportunity, especially in my stage of my career, sort of mid-40s. So I was very honoured to be selected for the team, and I said 2001 was fantastic.
What was it about the team? What had made you so interested in it all the way along?
Well, the fact that the team was showing to the public and to the rest of the army and to the rest of the services that, you know, we weren't just the Army Air Corps running around in helicopters, you know, on a battlefield. We also had a civilian type role, and it was good for recruiting, it was good for morale to see our own display team throughout Europe putting the word forward for the Army Air Corps and showing we just weren't a bunch of cowboys that people sort of marked us with, if you want to put it that way, that we were all those helicopter boys, blah blah blah, but we weren't, we were a professional team, and we just proved the fact to people that we were a very professional team and safe. The Royal Air Force have got the red arrows, and we were the Blue Eagles display team, so it was just another service showing their bit.
Is there a long history to the team? I don't know much about its history.
Yeah, the Blue Eagles went back probably 30 years, and they started off with the G4, which was the Sioux, the ones you see in the MASH films, the little bubble. That's what they started off with. They were initially called kind of a Mickey thing. I think they were called the Blue Budgies. In fact, the very first team, they were called the Rissoles, and it was taking the Mickey out of the Royal Air Force, and they were told they couldn't do that. So they then became the Budgies, Blue Budgies, for a very short period of time, and they were said they couldn't do the Blue Budgies, so they'd become the Eagles, and then became the Blue Eagles display team.
Why were they the Rissoles? Should I get that?
I'm not quite sure. They were called Ross Malick, who was one of the first team leaders. He was called the Rissoles, and I think it was similar to the Royal Air Force. I wouldn't like them to try and work it out.
Speculate.
Yeah. So, but yeah, they were told they couldn't do that, and that's again the Blue Eagles. And then every year since then, they've had a team of various types of aircraft. In the early 90s, they had the whole team was Lynx. Then it was rather expensive to run the whole team of Lynx, so they put it back to one Lynx and four Gazelles. It was good.
What did the training involve?
Initially, we all formed in the team in February of the season we were going to display. And we just run through. Initially, it would be individual aircraft manoeuvres with the Gazelles and with the Lynx. Every pilot going through a training about 5 weeks. And then once we'd got the individual moves perfected, well, then the team leader then sort of really took on the display then. He'd already designed the display, and then he would stick it together, and then we'd do another 2 or 3 weeks of sticking the display together as a team. Obviously, you know, when you fly as an individual, it's not a problem, but when you fly in close proximity to another aircraft, the concentration is to most for safety, not only of yourself, your aircraft, but the crowd and everybody else around.
I was just wondering whether you could tell me about the 5 weeks at the beginning where you're learning the individual moves. What are the basic moves that you learned in that period that you hadn't done before?
Well, the basic with the flying is normal. Everybody flies it, Lynx or Gazelle. I was very fortunate. I was in D&T squadron, so I flew both the Lynx and Gazelle, but I was obviously going to be the display on the Lynx. So I mean, first of all, went up and used basic wing over manoeuvres, i.e. pulling the aircraft up to 90 degrees nose up, turning it 90 degrees nose down, and then flying out. But that was, you did that for probably half an hour in one session, and you could do anything up to probably, you know, 10, 15, 20 pedal turns till you got it perfect. So you went up 90 degrees nose up, the aircraft was parallel to the surface of the earth, and then when you turned, you were 90 degrees nose down instead of squiffed off to one side or whatever. It was anticipation of different pedal movements and controls. And initially, it seems simple, it's very difficult.
Why is that?
Coordination. Obviously, helicopter is different to a fixed wing, where you're flying three controls all at one time. You're flying with your feet and both arms. Your collective, your cyclic, and your pedals are going all at the same time, and that's where you've got to coordinate the manoeuvres with all them bits going on. But the other thing is also you've got to be looking inside and make sure you're not over-temping engines or rotor RPM's going up, or you've got problems inside that you haven't noticed, over torquing it, because you haven't been looking at the correct dials. So it all comes into it, so you do about a million things at once, and initially it found very difficult.
So let me just, I'm just trying to make sure I really understand what's going on. So you're sitting in the cockpit, you're looking at your dials, you're checking the things you just mentioned, and then what else is going on in terms of what your hands and feet are doing? And
well, obviously, in the Lynx, you've got two engines, obviously. You're doing 120 knots, which is, 135 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden you put that aircraft from straight and level flight into a nose-up attitude. So your nose is going up towards the sky. You're obviously losing speed because you want to turn the aircraft at the top of the turn. You pull power on the engines to get you in that position, and you've got to ease off the engines to stop the climb. And then when you're actually turning with your feet pedalling it around, your power reducing, not increasing power, and also your cyclic indicating the turn, it's just everything going at once. But you don't think of it as that, it just happens automatically. But then you've got to anticipate as you're coming out of a turn, make sure your pedal's going in to stop you swinging too far around, or going over too far with the nose tucked under rather than coming out the way. It just goes on and on. It's a nightmare. But that was the basic, just getting the pedal turns right. Then from the pedal turns you go into full wing overs, which is a coordinated turn. So you're flying in one direction, say northerly, and then you're going to do a complete 270 wing over, which will be pull the nose up, turn the aircraft completely all the way around, and then go out westerly. It's easy to do in my hands.
So it's a loop with a sort of...
The wing over is just a nose up, a turn, and you just fly it around and then come all the way around and back out. So you've done not 360, you've done a 270 degree turn. And from north going on to west, say turning right. Or you could do a complete 360 all the way around and go back in the same direction. Or just a 90 degree, or even just a 180 and go back the direction you've come. So rather than do a straight pedal turn and back and down like that, you turn the aircraft around in an arc. From then you go on to loops, which is not done in helicopters. You know, it's something that people think the helicopters can't do. The Lynx can. It can do a loop. It can do a backflip, which is a manoeuvre that I think it's the only the Lynx can do it, actually. I haven't seen any other aircraft do it, so I'm sure it must be one of the Lynx. But a backflip is in the hover, stationary, and then pulling the aircraft completely backwards over itself and through and out.
How did you feel the first time you tried it?
It was very odd because I hadn't done it before, obviously, and the guy who was teaching me a little called Colin Dunscombe, and just to feel the aircraft going all over itself, backwards, upside down and round and out again, it just wasn't right. It wasn't natural. It wasn't the right thing to do. Bearing in mind, you're thinking of the blades coming in, slapping the aircraft. But with a rigid edge, you've got that power that doesn't allow that, and that's why you maintain a certain power limit, so the blades can't come into the aircraft. They stop at an angle away from the aircraft.
So that's the fear.
Yeah, the fear of initially was the fact that you're going to go upside down in it from that position there all the way backwards and then out. It gets the old adrenaline going and shows you what your pucker factor is all about. But it was. Very unusual. It was very unnatural. I've said that already, but it's very unnatural for the fact that you're going to flip this aircraft upside down in a second from a stationary position as well. And there, that was mind-boggling. It was absolutely fantastic. Once I'd done a couple, it was great. I just loved the manoeuvre. It was just fantastic. And inside the aircraft, you realise there was no sort of tension on the aircraft. There was no power put through the engines in excess of the normal limits. It was quite good. Then obviously you did a loop, which is a straightforward, it's not straightforward for a rotary, but for a fixed wing it's quite easy to do a loop. With a rotary, it's difficult. You've got to keep it straight all over the top. The fact that you're doing a complete loop is just unnatural as well. But that was just mind-boggling. I loved it.
Can you talk me through doing a loop?
Well, I'll set myself up. If I was running in now, I'd be running in at 120 knots. I'd be... whatever, say 500 feet, say for instance, for altitude, and then once I'd set myself up, I would have the power set at whatever percentage it was set, say 60% power. Whatever power I went into the start of that manoeuvre, I wouldn't change. It would just, you'd freeze your arm. But there were three calls you had to say. It was your height, your speed, and the fact that you had the pitch and rollout on the flight control system. Because if you didn't have the pitch and rollout on the flight control system, it wouldn't let you go over the top, it would fight you. The actual autopilot type thing. So you had to make sure that it was pitch and rollout, 120 knots, and then at 500 feet. So you were set up. And then you just run in, and then it would just be a case of, once you've got your line where you're going to do your loop, you just call it, yet again, that for safety, you would call out the three things, the pitch and rolls out, I'm 120 knots, and I'm at 500 feet. Loop, loop, go. And you just freeze, whatever power you had, you just freeze your arm next to your leg, aircraft would go up, keeping it straight with the pedals, looking for a cloud or some sort of something that you line up. But once you'd lost the horizon and there was no clouds around, say for instance like today, nice blue sky, it was just, you know, it was pure by the seat of your pants flying then, and you had to make sure that the aircraft was going up all over the top. As it went over the top, it had a tendency to kick a little bit to the right, so you sort of squeeze a little bit of left pedal in as you went over the top. As you coming down again, you ease and squeeze off the power just a tad, so you're not pulling too far through. And as you're coming out of the loop again, you see the power's coming on, the stick's going forward, and it'll come out the loop. And it used to be a cry of blue, green, blue. And the reason is you're looking for the blue sky as you go up, looking for the green as you come over the top, and looking for the blue again. And once you've got the blue again, you knew that the stick had to go forward and the power was coming on, and you'd level out at 500 feet again, hopefully. Not always the case, you may go a little bit lower. But
What was the sensation like?
It was just fantastic. But on the initial training, it was the fact you'd come out of it. You wouldn't come out on the heading you went into it because you weren't experienced enough. So you'd say you're heading 270 degrees, when you went in, you'd come out 300 or you'd come out at 24. You weren't really bothered because the big achievement was doing the loop. So if you'd done the loop and come up 20, 30 degrees off heading, you couldn't give a squeeze about that. You would chuff the pitch, actually go over the loop. And then from that, you just start perfecting it. And within a short period of time, probably a few days, maybe a week, you just feel it in your body, you feel it in your hands, your feet, what was exactly right when you were going into it. And you knew that at a particular point, if you just touched a little bit of pedal, touched a tiny bit of power, you know, it would just do what you wanted to do. And then the big thing was, don't do massive corrections. If you do massive corrections, first of all, you feel it, the aircraft rolls out wrong, the crowd see it, it looks horrible, you probably descend too low. It all gone through your mind. So it was all just touche. The word touche came in quite a lot, just a touche of this and a touche of that. It's probably not in the dictionary, but you know, it's actually a nice word. But yeah, you just fine tune it. And that's what we did. And after you master the loop, after about a week, you'd go into the backflip or the eagle roll. And the eagle roll was a manoeuvre that absolutely used to flabbergast me, because I used to do it, and to be honest, at the end, if I didn't know, I did it in the first place, so it was just odd. Eagle roll, you run in towards, well, whatever which direction you're going, it's normally towards the crowd. At 800 feet, you're going straight towards them, 120 knots. And you've got a line on the ground, imaginary line on the ground, which is you're going to turn on. So you're flying towards the crowd, 800 feet, 120 knots. And just before the line, you just pull it, cycle it back slightly. So you're about 3 degrees of climb on. And it's not much 3 degrees, but it's just enough. You can just see it coming up. As the nose starts to rise slightly and the speed starts coming off, so you go from 120 knots to 110 knots. And yet again, pitching rolls out. I'm 800 feet. I'm coming down, and as it gets to your imaginary line on the ground, you push in full right pedal and full right stick. The aircraft flips upside down and then comes out again that way in about 2 seconds. So you go from 120 knots facing north to 100 knots facing west in 2 or 3 seconds. It just flips itself upside down, kicks itself under itself, and then back out the other way. And all you do then, as you're coming out again, you're looking for your cues on the ground, you're looking for your line. As you come out of your line, bearing in mind you're all Lizzie being the spin dryer or something in that few seconds, and then you're back out of it, you're looking for your cues, you're looking for your line, it's your line of power, and you nose it forward and fly off in that direction. And it's just a fantastic manoeuvre. It's a big crowd sort of, oh my God, what's happened, you know? It's really good. I wasn't particularly keen at doing that initially because it felt so unnatural to from 120 knots to banging full right pedal and right stick.
It's like a handbrake turn, but with an extra three dimensions.
So, I mean, it's like that, like that, like that, straight in, all in, and you're back up obviously the right way, going out that way, and you thought to yourself, well, God, this is, you know, horrific. Looked brilliant to the crowd, they just loved it, you know, see this aircraft flip itself upside down and go out the other direction.
But you got the hang of it.
Yeah, and then once you'd got all them individual manoeuvres done in your own mind and you were confident, you were happy, and you knew when you went to the manoeuvre where you were going to come out of the manoeuvre, all the rest of it, they then start putting the team together. Obviously, because now you're going to be flying with aircraft in close proximity.
What were the stages of doing that? What were the stages of
getting Well, what they do, the Lynx was probably left out of it initially. The Gazelles would go off in pairs and they'd do their pairs bit. Because in the display, you'd always have Gazelle pairs or the individual. Naturally, it'd be pairs. And so they'd go off and do pairs turns, wing overs, pedal turns together. The Elphinstone loop they used to do, which was it's 360 degree wing over sort of thing, but it would be nice, pretty steep, almost like a loop, but the Gazelle couldn't loop, so it used to go into the manoeuvre, pull up slightly, all the way around, and then go back out in the same direction. But when you've got two together, in close proximity, going up like that, you know, he's got to watch for him, and he's got to watch for him. And that was the thing. See, one pair, in a pair, you would lose, one would lose visual contact with the other. So in certain manoeuvres, say right-hand man was watching left-hand man, and then obviously in a particular manoeuvre, right-hand man couldn't see left-hand man, but left-hand man could see right-hand man, so that's where the safety would come into it. They'd all be watching each other, and that was it. The other thing was confidence in your buddy, making sure your stick man's going to do the right turn, going to go in the right speed. He's not gone off a couple of degrees, so you're coming in together rather than going up together. And that was the other thing about making sure your cues on the ground, your lines, your headings were smack on. Bearing in mind, after two aerobatic manoeuvres, you couldn't rely on your computer. On your compasses, because they'd be toppled. So you'd have no compass to go on. It was all visual cues then.